I was very conscious of, you know, that poverty was structural and could only be eliminated if there were structural changes. It wasn't simply a personal thing that could be eradicated. You could alleviate the suffering, but you'd only eliminate poverty if structures were changed. So I was felt very strongly about that and spoke about it whenever I got a chance. Now that didn't, people weren't very happy about that, a lot of people, and they used to call me the poverty nun, and they either loved me or hated me, and the poverty could have meant anything. But it was difficult enough because, even though some things I said was what people were saying privately, but when you say them publicly, they take on a whole new life and a whole new meaning and a whole new response and reaction.
Yeah. And what kind of things, what sort of structural things were you seeing, and what kind of structural things need changing?
Well, the whole structure need changed, really, if you look at kind of the whole economic structure and the way it was, you know, that the more you had, the more you got. And the whole gross inequality and the difference between those who had money and those who didn't. And, you know, the small number at the top owning so much of the wealth, and then 25% of the population living in absolute poverty, meaning really that they didn't have often enough to eat, and they didn't have a warm coat, basic things like that. So those kind of gross inequalities can only be eradicated if the whole structure has changed and there's a redistribution of wealth and resources. And that's really what we called for. Then if you looked at health, you had the two-tier system. For education, you had a two-tier system. So right across the board, there were inequalities that really, I knew, had to be reduced, had to be, if not eliminated, at least reduced radically, if we were going to have any chance at all of sorting the whole situation with regard to poor people out. So that kind of structural change, and then I suppose we were kind of, when in the Common Poverty Agency, the two big projects that we had, one of them was community development and the other one was welfare rights organisation. So this was promoting people's rights and promoting people's sense of community and being responsible to the community. And that really stirred up people as well, because they saw us as interfering with the status quo. And like, if you were on the one hand, if people are getting welfare, they should really be grateful. And we were there stirring it up and saying, look, we should all be demanding more, that you would get more, and that you have entitled to this, and why don't you get that, blah, blah, blah. Or in community development, we were helping people, for example, to develop little cooperatives, different kinds of cooperatives. One was a knitting cooperative, for example, where we had people who were knitting iron garments, and they were selling them to a middleman who made a lot of profit, who sold them on. And these women were getting very little, and they were depending on that money in order to buy school books for the children or send the children to school. And we changed that. We formed a cooperative, and they were able to sell them directly and made three times as much money on their garments as they did originally. But this brought down the wrath of the powers that be on us, because we were interfering with the system that for them worked well. Why did we have to change something that fine? Why fix it if it isn't broken? But it was very broken.
And of course, I mean, something that people are looking at today is the inequality in treatment of how, say, the banks have been treated compared to how, you know, regular people are treated. And I'm sure it must be galling when you're looking for funding for services and you're looking for money for this and for that, no money to be found. Suddenly, banks look for billions and the money can be found. So, you know, it sort of shows that money is there, but the will has to be there.
Yeah, it is disgraceful, you know, that what has happened in Ireland, and it is disgraceful that the kind of greed that was there has had such implication for everyone, from the little people with their pensions that are gone. You know, down to the young people who can't find work. All that is due to the greed of a small number of people. And I think it is absolutely appalling. But even still, that's really not being tackled, because in fact we are doing very little about the people who caused that. And it's not that it's, I mean, everything you ask about today is system failure, but these can be identified. It isn't as simple as to say it's system failure. Anyway, we should always know who's accountable, and people should be accountable. But in this case, this hasn't happened. And on the other hand, you see that lady was put in prison because she was objecting to people's interfering with her trees, and just thrown into prison like that. And there are numerous other examples of the way people are treated by the law, and how easy it is to punish the little people, to punish the poor people, and they carry the burden for the rest of us.
And that's a story that's true in terms of prisons and in terms of a lot of areas, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, it's right true. So it's, and you know, it's amazing how quiet we have been about the great injustice to our country. I mean, people are marvellous. I don't know whether I can say that, but extraordinary people who lost so much, and most people lost something. And a lot of people are saying nothing because they never told anybody they had anything in the first place. And therefore they can't say now they lost it. And, you know, whether it is great or small, it doesn't matter. They lost it, and it's wrong. And we must always say so.